to do their job, really. But oftentimes they would not stop until they could see your lungs inflate and deflate through the back of the ribs. His back, friends, the back of Jesus would have literally been laid in shreds. And then they get done with that, and they put this coarse garment back on him. You remember as a kid, maybe scraping your knee and having jeans on? You've been running and you fall down and you scrape your knee and you get jeans on. What happens as the blood there starts to dry with those jeans? It sticks. Okay. How bad does it hurt when you pull those off? Yeah, it feels awesome, doesn't it? Doesn't feel too good. Now, remember, they put this garment back on Jesus. It's scratchy. It's not real comfortable. Okay? The blood begins to dry. And then what do they do after they take him before Herod? Remember, they take that back off of him, and then what do they put on it? They put a robe on him, didn't they? And then the soldiers, on top of all that, they've ripped these sores back open, and then they plait a crown of thorns, they place it upon their head. Now, when we think of thorns, how big are the thorns that we think of oftentimes? Inch. 2 inches at the most. These thorns. Okay. But you do have mesquite thorns that are that long. But we're talking about thorns that are 3-4 inches long. Okay? They put this on his head. Okay, they didn't fit it either. Okay. They put it on his head, and then what do? All right, they pushed it, but then what? They hit it, didn't they? They took a rod and smote him over the head, pushing those thorns down further into the scalp. Okay? So all of these things, and all of this is before he ever gets to the cross, right? Not only that, how long, as they placed the cross upon his shoulders, how long had he been without food or water? About 36 hours. He hasn't had anything to eat or drink. He's lost all this blood. And now he's having to bear his cross to Calvary. Now, of course, we know that Simon of Cyrene was compelled to carry the cross for him. Okay, he gets there, and where do they place the nails? All right, in the wrist. What is there? All right, well, you have tendons, but what else? There are nerves there. There's a ball of nerves right there. All right, and they place the nail in such a fashion that when your weight is hanging upon the cross, that it's resting right there on that ball of nerves. Right? The Romans had perfected crucifixion. As a matter of fact, the history records that they, if they could have, or they did actually in some cases, they kept men alive as long as 9 days upon the cross. 9 days. Okay? Same thing in the feet, right? You got a ball of nerves there that they have perfected, that they drive the nail in a certain place, you push up there, and you're pushing up on that ball of nerves. Excruciating pain no matter which way you look at it. Okay? And then on top of that, what kills you on the cross other than exposure to the elements if you're hanging there for 9 days? All right, drown. Your lungs will fill with fluid. You suffocate. The way your body is positioned on the cross, okay? You have to push up to exhale. You can inhale down if you're sagging, your body's sagging. You can inhale all you want, but you can't exhale. You have to push up to exhale. Okay, so you're suffocating. You've got all these different things going on. Okay, and it's just an excruciating way to die. This is God's picture to us. All the things from the garden to everything that culminates upon the cross. This is God's picture to the human race of what sin does. Alright, that should open our eyes to this idea of sin. It is pictured as a putrefying sore. And when we read verse 5 of Isaiah 53, is that a pretty picture that he paints there of what happens to our Lord? What's the idea of wound? Go back to Isaiah 1 and verse 6, right? It's something that's open. Okay, so he's wounded for our transgressions. He's bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All these things that happened to him, it was for the purpose of saving us. But it was to rid us of our sin. And in order to do that, Jesus had to bear it. And so God gives us these pictures of sin. How does Peter describe sin in 1 Peter 2 and verse 24? 1 Peter 2 and verse 24. Again, the word stripes is used there at the end of verse 24. And so we're getting glimpses here of the, and he's quoting from Isaiah, by the way, of this picture that God is giving us. All right, you heard of leprosy, right? We read of it in the Bible. Read of the 10 lepers in the New Testament. You read of some lepers in the Old Testament. Now, what is leprosy, and what does it do? Just eats away at your body, right? Causes the what? Flesh to die. How do you suppose that smells? Not very good. Friends, leprosy in the Bible is also a picture of sin. And what it does. It's not a pretty picture, alright? Picture number two. Sin number one is pictured as a putrefying disease. Number two, sin is pictured as a heavy burden. Let's turn to Psalm 38. Psalm 38. So I'm going to read verses 4 through 6, please.
For my iniquities are gone over my head. It's a heavy burden, which are too heavy for me. My wounds deep and are corrupt because of my foolishness. I am troubled. I am bowed down greatly. I go mourning all the day long.
All right. First of all, look at what the psalmist says in verse 4. My iniquities have gone over my head like a heavy burden. They are too heavy for me. What's he mean that his iniquities have gone over his head? Okay. One way to look at it. Anybody else? He's overwhelmed. Okay. He's drowning. They've become unbearable. All right. It's gotten to the point that he says, they are too heavy for me. And he can't bear them anymore. All right. And verse 5 will actually go with our previous point. My wounds are foul and festering. They stink. All right. But why are they that way? Because of my foolishness. All right. So sin again, is foolishness. I am troubled. I am bowed down greatly. The burden has become so heavy that in order to, if he can continue on at all, he's having to lean over a great deal. That's how heavy the burden has become on his back. You ever had a heavy pack on? Most of you that have ever been in the military, you've had a heavy pack on, right? You're having to run with this pack on and things. What do you find yourself doing the more tired your body gets and you're running? Well, you'd like to, but you got a military commander on your rear end. You're not going to sit down, are you? What do you find yourself doing? The more tired your body gets, you're running less erect, aren't you? What do you begin to do with a heavy pack? In order to keep from falling back, what do you have to do? You've got to lean forward. That's the idea here. The sin has become so heavy upon his back that he's having to lean forward. It says he's bowed greatly. Okay, the idea here is that the pack has become so heavy that as he's gotten tired, and as he's leaning forward, if he goes forward any further, he's going to fall. And so this is the idea that he's given. All right, I go mourning. Look at this. He goes mourning all the day long. When's the last time we've mourned over our sin? We need to. Yes. But here the psalmist says, I go all the day. He goes mourning all the day. It's pictured as a heavy, heavy burden. Let's look at one more picture here as far as a heavy burden. Let's go to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6. Let's read together verses 1 and 2. Brethren, if a man is overtaken, right? Think again of the psalmist and how large his burden has gotten. If a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Friends, sometimes things in this life just get too heavy to bear by ourselves. Right? And so we as Christians are to help one another. All right, but going back to the first part of verse 1, if a man is overtaken in a fault or sin, what are we talking about there, being overtaken? All right, the sin itself is defeating him. Okay, anyone else? Okay, again, overwhelmed him is the idea, okay, is the sense of it. Sometimes you talk with someone and they've got a problem. Okay? And you talk with them, and sometimes what the response is, I've got a handle on it. I'm okay. All right, a lot of times you talk to an addict who doesn't want to admit that he's an addict. One of the phrases that they will utter is, I can quit anytime I want, right? That's not the case. They need help overcoming. All right, and so this is the idea of being overtaken. They're overwhelmed. They can't get out by themselves. And so that's why Paul says, well, you that are spiritual, restore such a one. Okay, go and help them, in other words. What's the purpose of at the end of verse 1? What's the purpose of helping one that has been overtaken, that has become overwhelmed in sin? All right. Well, you want to restore him, but what? Go on. Continue to read it. Consider what? Do it in the spirit of meekness. Consider yourself. Consider yourself. Friend, guys, what's at risk here? What's at risk? Your eternal soul. Okay, you can be overtaken. Maybe it's not the same sin that they're struggling with. Maybe it's something else. But the idea is, what if and when you're overtaken, you're going to need help too. That's all right. 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 Exactly. We're helping one another in this. Verse 5, as Dennis pointed out, for each one shall bear his own load. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. If we can do that, then we will have no problem helping one another along. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So sin is pictured again here as this heavy burden, something that overtakes us, and we can't do these things on our own. We need help, and we go to God for that. And that's part of the purpose of the psalm, in Psalm 38, is taking these things to God and acknowledging his sin. Right, bear and share. That's a good way to put it. To help one another in that way. Number three, sin is pictured as a hard taskmaster. Sin is pictured as a hard taskmaster. All right, what's a taskmaster? All right. All right, so a taskmaster tells you what to do. Or is there another way to look at it? Anyone want to expound on that? Rules over them? Okay. Look at the book of Exodus, and you look and see there concerning the Egyptian taskmaster set over the Hebrew people. All right. Were they very pleasant to deal with? No. What happened if they didn't feel that you were bearing your burden, so to speak? They whipped you. Okay? They put a whip to your back. Okay? And so this idea of sin here, this picture of sin is a hard taskmaster. You look at John 8:34, Romans 6 and verse 6, Romans 7 and verse 23. They're all picturing sin here. Sin is pictured as a hard taskmaster. And that's the idea. The taskmaster is one that oversees those that are slaves. That's the idea here. How is sin? Let me ask this. How is sin a hard taskmaster? All right. It can be controlling. Sin always, okay, sin will take us further than we want to go and keep us longer than we want to stay. That's what sin does. And as this hard taskmaster, right, and again, you go back and you look at Exodus chapter 1 in particular, verses 11 through 14, and the picture of this taskmaster in Egypt, they were not very pleasant, right? It's something that was going to be very hard upon Israel. And you look at everything that happened to Israel over the course of their time in Egypt. Now, of course, God had His purpose. If you've been listening on Mondays, we've been talking about that, and to a degree anyway. We're fixing to finish up Genesis, and we'll get into the book of Exodus hopefully tomorrow. But you look at what's taking place with these slave drivers, these taskmasters, that's what they are. And everything that they're imposing upon them, and that's a picture of sin. Did Israel want to do these things that they were being forced to do? No, not really. Made their task even heavier. Right. And so that's the idea here. It can be, sin can be enslaving. And so we have to beware. Number four. Quickly running out of time. Number four. Sin is pictured as a foolish insanity. Someone for us, please. Proverbs 24 and verse 9. Proverbs 24 and verse 9. Go ahead. Alright, the thought of foolishness is sin. Alright, and so the idea here of sin, the thought of it, he says, of this foolish thought is sin. In Luke 15 and verse 17, look at what the prodigal says there in verse 17. But when he came, look at this here, the very first phrase, when he came to himself, what does this imply? All right, it seems to some degree that he had been out of his head. Okay, now does that excuse him from what he had done? The sins he had committed? Not at all. But the Bible tells us that his sin had gotten to the point to this foolishness that he had played out now, finally he comes back to himself. And he thinks about his situation. And what does he realize concerning his sin? And the state in which he finds himself now? In a manner of speaking, he was insane to leave what he had at home, wasn't he? He was foolish to leave all of that. And he says as much there in verse 17. Look at it. He says, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger. Matter of fact, the King James says that he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that he was feeding to the pigs. He was going to eat pig slop when he finally came to himself. And so sin is pictured as foolishness. It's pictured as a foolish insanity. Now again, that does not in any way absolve the sinner of guilt. Okay, but when we reflect upon what sin does and the state that it puts us into, we can look at it as insanity. Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. Right. Right. And I think if we couple that here with the prodigal. I mean, he planned these things. But again, where he's at, you know, the state that he went from here to way down here. And as he's down here, what's he reflecting upon? He's looking back at everything that he had done and then everything he had left. And he says what of it? I've been a fool. Right. Yeah, and so he says, I've lost my mind to do this rather than stay where I should have been anyway. And so that's the picture here of sin. Appreciate that comment. Then it's, number five. Sin is pictured as a defiling filth. All right, I don't think we can find a better passage than 2 Peter chapter 2, 20 through 22. For this particular one. 2 Peter 2, 20 through 22. Let me read that when you have it, please. Now, in times past, we've talked about this particular passage. And look first at the first part of it, okay? You've already been delivered from the world of foolishness. Okay, how do we do that? How are we delivered from that? The faith of obedience, through the blood of Christ. Okay, we've been delivered from it. All right? But now they are entangled again therein. Now, Peter says they've become dirty once more. We've been cleansed, and now when we go back to this world that we have left, we're dirty again. And then he describes it as a dog and a pig. Okay? Have you ever watched a dog after he's vomited? It doesn't, he may not go back to it immediately, but eventually he goes back to it and he eats it. He ingests it again. And if you ever watched that, how have you felt at your stomach? It makes you feel sick, doesn't it? It's not very pleasant to watch. Okay? But think as well, right? Concentrate for a moment to this sow that was washed. Returns again to her wallowing in the mire. Alright. My granddad used to raise pigs when I was younger. All right, and there might not have been rain for 3 weeks. And guess what is still out in the lot there where the pigs are kept? Water and mud. Where does that come from? You ever thought about it? Try not to, right? It's their own excrement. You see, pigs can't sweat. And so they have to stay moist. And in order to do that, they have to have a mire or a wallow. And if they haven't had rain, they moisten it themselves. And they wallow in it, coat their body in mud, and it does a dual purpose as far as their health is concerned. It keeps the parasites and things, the mud does, parasites and things off of them. But you think about that, it's nasty. Okay? You have washed this pig, and she goes, Peter's not just talking about mud, is he? Go and wallow again in their own excrement. Their own dung, right? Their own urine. And they're wallowing in this. That's how Peter describes sin. It's filthy. Absolutely filthy. And that's how he describes it there. It is a defiling filth. Yes, sir. Anything that stinks, I don't know. I remember Ashley and I went a couple years ago. We went and stayed with Trent and Lisa down in San Marcos for Focal Point, and they had a little corgi, and they had just left that dog outside, and he came back in, and I'm sitting on the couch, and he gets right up here next to my shoulder on top of that couch, and that dog stunk to high heaven. He had got, and he's white and brown. The white wasn't white anymore. It was a yellow color. No idea what that dog rode in. But he got a bath that night. I mean, they do. They like the rolling stuff. But it's the same idea though. They've gone and they've rolled in this waste. And that's the picture that Peter paints for us. It is a defiling filth. All right, we got a couple more. Number six, it is pictured as a binding debt. A binding debt. What does it mean to be bound? Tied up. Okay, you can't get out. Alright, it is a binding, and then on top of that, not only does it bind, but it's a debt. Okay? And it's pictured in this way. Let's turn to Matthew 18. Let's begin reading in verse 23. Now this is the parable of the unforgiving servant. Okay? And so let's read with me, if you will, from the beginning of verse 23. Therefore the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. But he was not able to pay. His master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and the payment be made. Now, how much... In the big picture, how much did this servant owe? All right, really millions. Okay, he could not, working at the daily wage of the day, he would not have been able to repay this in 10 lifetimes. Okay. In other words, this is a debt that he could never get out from under. Okay? Verse 26, the servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the master of that servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him the debt. But that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. All right? And how much was 100 denarii? All right. 4 months' wages. All right? This guy could not have repaid his debt in 10 years. He goes and grabs a guy that owed him 4 months' wages by the throat and says, pay me now. So his fellow servant fell down, verse 29, at his feet and begged him, saying, have patience with me and I will pay you all. And he would not, but went and threw him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what had been done, they were very grieved and came and told their master all that had been done. Then his master, after he had called him, said to him, you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant just as I had pity on you? Now here's the picture of sin, verses 34 and 35. And his master was angry and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him. Guess where the servant would have died? In prison, in the hands of the torturers. Verse 35, so my heavenly Father also will do to you if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brother his trespasses. It is a binding debt, one that cannot be gotten out from under. The only way that we can get out from under sin is through the blood of Jesus Christ and the forgiveness of God. That's it. And that's the picture that's painted. Number 7, sin is pictured as a blemishing stain. The blemishing stain. Psalm 51 again pictures this in a great way. Verses 1, 2, and 7 in particular. Those are great ways of sin being pictured as this blemishing stain. James 1 and verse 27. Same type of picture as a blemishing stain. Isaiah 1, 18 through 20. Again, 2 Peter 3 and verse 14. Sin had left a crimson stain, as we sing, but he washed it white as snow. Alright? Sin as the stain, it's one that we can't, again, something we can't get out on our own. We need the blood of Christ. Number 8, sin is pictured as an impenetrable darkness. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Notice what Paul says here at the end of the verse as far as light and darkness. Really the first part of it too. Be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has, look at this, righteousness with lawlessness. All right, righteousness is equated with light, and what communion has light, righteousness, with darkness or lawlessness? It's and the word for darkness here is an utter darkness. Okay. 1 John 1 and verse 6, 1 John 2, 9 and 11, all talks about light and dark. And this idea of this impenetrable darkness. And that's what sin is. It is indeed a darkness. Anyone have any comments over sin and word pictures? All right, let's get ourselves ready for worship. Wednesday we'll be discussing secret and besetting sins. Secret and besetting sins. So we'll look at that on Wednesday. Let's get ourselves ready for worship.